Welcome to The Jump. I am Rachel Nichols. Today I am joined by our resident coach and new papa, David Fizdale. Congratulations, Fizz. Our senior writer, Ramona Shelburne, will be along later. And coming up, LeBron is going to speak to the media today. He is always very candid, so we will hear what he has to say. First, though, the saga of James Harden and the Rockets continues. Harden did not participate in the Rockets' first practice of the season yesterday. Rockets coach Steven Silas said Harden was not at practice because of the NBA's COVID-19 protocols. Harden did not return for a scheduled solo workout Sunday evening either, but told Rockets management he's going to report soon, whatever that is, a source told our Tim McMahon. Harden was all over Instagram this weekend, attending rapper Lil Baby's birthday party in Atlanta without wearing a face mask. Players were actually supposed to quarantine at home this week, other than testing at team facilities, individual workouts, and grocery shopping. I don't know if there were any groceries at Lil Baby's birthday party. James Harden's sister also took to IG to defend her brother. It was a photo of them together with the caption, "His pain is my pain. We got the same pain." So, what do the Rockets have to say about all of this? Here is Coach Steven Silas earlier today when asked about Harden. The question was, when will James be back and how big of a setback is this? Take a listen.
As far as timetable, there is no timetable as far as I know. And it is a setback. You know, you want your best player to be here. And there is a short window, as you've alluded to. As I said yesterday, we're working as if this is the 6th to the 23rd. So there is some time, but, you know, it is a setback. I mean, I have to be honest and understand that this is a setback, not having one of the best players in the NBA here. But I'm working with the guys who are here, and we're working hard, and we're doing a good job.
Well, shouts to him. New coach being put in a difficult position and being candid and honest. Definitely the way to go, coach, because people know if you're not telling the truth. What do you think it is like for him to be starting now and dealing with all of this?
Well, it's difficult. You know, you want your best player in camp. You want your best player there to lead and set examples and things like that. And right now they don't have that. And when you see him on Instagram having a good time, kind of going against the COVID protocols, I mean, it seems like James is sending a pretty strong message back to Houston about where he's at. And as the coach, you just got to keep pushing forward. You got to prepare your team. You know, you're going to have a no excuse attitude like I know Coach Silas has. And you do the best you can with what you have.
Well, that's definitely the playbook, but it is easier said than done. And for the whole Rockets organization, Fizz, can they afford to let this drag out through the season? Because they told our Tim McMahon earlier last month, we can afford to get uncomfortable. We're willing to get uncomfortable. We're not going to take less for James in a trade than we think that he is worth to set our organization up for the future. But are they going to be able to actually pull that off?
That's going to be a tough line to walk because, you know, they're going to be getting a lot of pressure from him and his people. And if he's not performing at the level that we're used to seeing from James Harden because he's got a lot going on internally, you know, people are going to look at that and see that as an opportunity to wait him out. And if Houston waits too long, they might get stuck in a position where they lose. So it's really walking a fine line on when to do it and when to pull the trigger. But also, you got to keep James Harden in a place where he still plays for you and performs for you and gives your team a chance.
Absolutely. And I now see we are joined by our senior insider, Ramona Shelburne. Lovely to have you here. Can you piggyback on what Fizz was saying? Just how long can the Rockets afford to wait this out?
Well, Rach, I mean, you were the one who covered Jimmy Butler in Minnesota a couple years ago.
Yep.
And I think we all thought that they had some time. Okay.
They did not, Ramona. They did not have time.
Everybody fairly uncomfortable. No. I seem to remember watching you interviewing him right as things were about to blow up there. And, you know, if a player wants to make the team uncomfortable, if he wants to be disruptive, then they can. And I think the one thing that got me about James's post over the weekend is, you know, this isn't Lou Williams at the strip club in Atlanta, at Magic City, where somebody posted a photo of him and then everybody said, oh, wait, Lou Williams was at Magic City?
Right.
This was James posting it himself.
Right.
He wanted people to know he was out with Lil Baby with the Prada bag and $100,000. Like, I don't know how much more blunt you can be, but like that's a message that's sent. Now, I also covered a media day. Oh man, it feels like a million years ago. I think it was 2007 though. Mm-hmm. When Kobe Bryant had demanded a trade with the Lakers, and we were all standing out there waiting to see if he'd show up, and none of his teammates knew if he'd show up, but he eventually showed up and did what he was supposed to do, said what he was supposed to say. The Lakers never traded him, and they went on to the finals that year because Andrew Bynum got good, and they traded for Pau Gasol. So could be one of two things for the Rockets.
Yeah, I remember Kobe Bryant said on the radio that he wanted to trade. It wasn't even like through reporters or sources. Yes. He came out on the radio and said, I wanted to be traded.
He put his name on it.
And absolutely, they waited him out. And it is a little bit of a battle of wills because James has 2 years left on his deal. And there is a point, Fizz, I think, where the coaching staff in the front office can say, we don't care. You need to be out on the court and play. And remember, if NBA players, quote, sit out, it's not like the NFL. NFL players can sit out and their contract year continues, even if they're not getting paid. With the NBA, if you don't report, your contract year does not start. So those 2 years he has left on his deal with the Rockets, if James would say, and he's obviously not going to do this, but just to explain the difference, if James's strategy was somehow, well, I'll just sit out this season, he would come back the next season and still have 2 more years left on his deal. Inside the franchise, what are the discussions, Fizz, that as a coach you're having with the front office back and forth about how to handle it and what to say to the other players?
Well, I think it first starts with sitting down with James and saying, okay, how do you want this to play out? And, you know, yes, we are actively shopping to trade you, but until we can, we all have to be pros and do our job. And you would expect and you would want to encourage him to be that type of person that would come out and play until that opportunity came up where a deal could be worked out. It doesn't look good for anybody if James doesn't show up.
Well, I think for Houston, for Houston, Fizz, like, to me, the conversation is James going to play nice? Is he going to be or is he going to be disruptive? If he can settle in with John Wall and they can get off to a decent start, that actually increases Houston's leverage. But if he's disruptive, if the team starts to crater, then they're really trading him from a place of duress. And I think that's what the organization has to determine. Now, I personally am in the camp that says he's under contract, he's a great player. You just don't get many chances to trade great players.
Right.
And if you trade James Harden in the wrong deal, your franchise is going to be digging out from under that trade for the next 5 to 6 years. So you wait until you get what you want for James Harden. And you have to tell him, help us help you.
I mean, yep.
You know, there's a lot of players who've been in this situation. And if you help us help you, then you can get to where you want and we can get something in return for you.
And that's where that professionalism comes in, where you just say, hey, listen, come out, play hard like you always do, perform at a high level. There's an expectation of James Harden when he steps on the court from fans and from everyone in the country around the world. Be that guy and just know that we're really pushing forward to try to help you get to the place that you want to be, so we can make sure that everybody wins.
And look, we talk about Kobe Bryant or Jimmy Butler. Every situation is different. And one of the complexities with this situation is that the team that James reportedly wants to go to is not a team that necessarily desperately needs him, right? They've got Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. So I guess it depends on how much KD and Kyrie say you absolutely to the front office have to go get James. But it's not a team that necessarily has to pay a sky-high price because they're desperate for James Harden. He would kind of be a luxury on that team. So that's going to change the leverage and the negotiations here as well. We'll have to see if there's anywhere else James might be interested in going, or this saga could end up for a long time. We'll keep watching Instagram. Who knows? And by the way, Ramona, I'm glad you casually dropped that $100,000 because James Harden apparently gave Lil Baby $100,000 for his birthday, among other gifts, which is amazing. Coming up, the NBA has released hundreds of pages of guidelines on health protocols for this upcoming season. How enforceable are they? We'll discuss that. The Blazers were supposed to hold their first team practice of training camp yesterday, but that didn't happen. Instead, thanks to 3 positive COVID tests in 4 days, Portland's entire facility has been shut down. Oh, and the Blazers are supposed to play their first preseason game in 4 days. Toto, I have a feeling we're not in the bubble anymore. Instead, welcome to the new NBA, where coronavirus could easily end up being more disruptive than it's already been in the NFL or Major League Baseball. After all, those sports are played outside. Football has 6 days between games to see if a positive test is ripping through the team. In baseball, the players have pretty limited physical contact with each other. But basketball? Yeah. NBA teams will be trying to fit in 3 to 4 games a week indoors, with players sweating and breathing all over each other as they travel around the country. And they're not starting from a great place. When teams started COVID testing to prepare for training camps, nearly 9% of players tested positive, a number that would be catastrophic if it continued throughout the season. So how do officials make sure it doesn't? Well, this weekend, the league dropped a 158-page memo detailing the new rules. That was an expansion on the 138-page memo they dropped last weekend. And here are some of the rules they talked about. Players and staff are no longer allowed to go to any bars, lounges, or clubs, even when they're at home and on their free time. No, quote, live entertainment either, Lou Williams, and no visits to public gyms, spas, pools. So it would seem that, say, if a player has a kid on a sports team and that team is playing this winter, the player cannot go to his kid's games. It'll be interesting to see how the league interprets that one. No indoor social gatherings that exceed 15 people either, so watch out for that Super Bowl party. And the rules get even more strict when teams are on the road. Players can't use the hotel gym, for example, unless the hotel has closed it to all other guests during the team's entire stay and sanitizes it between each use. There are rules for where and how players can eat, rules about mask wearing, testing, quarantining. And teams who break the rules, intentionally or not, the NBA says it could levy fines, suspensions, or loss of draft picks. Games could be forfeited. Individual players could see their game checks docked. Oh, and the league will also be doing unannounced spot inspections of team facilities to make sure they are in compliance, too. So is all of this going to work? Yes and no. The NBA has so far been the most thoughtful sports league in America when it comes to COVID, from the experts they're working with to the protocols that they have put in place. But this is a virus that has a Rasheed Wallace-like disregard for officiating. And no matter how many rules there are, the positive tests are going to come. The games will be disrupted. So no, Toto, we're not in the bubble anymore. There are no ruby slippers to click together, just a lot of patience and a lot of crossed fingers as what could be the NBA's most chaotic season is set to begin. Coach Fizz, this is a lot, a lot. As a coach, if you were in the position of trying to manage players dealing with all this, how enforceable even are all these rules?
Well, I think you have to have those rules in place. I mean, you're trying to pull off something that's nearly impossible. So you do have to have those things in place. But you just really would hope that people would take this seriously enough that they wouldn't put themselves in those positions to jeopardize not only their health and other people's health and lives, but your profession, your craft. A lot of people are going to suffer just because of irresponsible decisions. I think that's going to be what it comes down to, is the personal responsibility of everyone doing their job to make sure that everyone stays safe. The same thing we've been asking the whole country to do, right? But I think the next step is going to be, what is the NBA going to do when a guy gets sick? How are they going to handle that? And then how are they going to track that and keep the league moving forward as they try to get 72 games accomplished? I think all of that stuff is going to be something that the league is going to have to figure out as they go. But I do think having a strict situation in place to start is the way to go. And then you can always adjust from there.
You know, Rach, I think this is going to come down to players keeping each other accountable. This is what what's happened in every other sport. I remember when baseball started up and the Marlins had a big outbreak, and there were several other teams that were disrupted by it. And it almost looked like baseball wasn't going to get off the ground. And, you know, I think the tipping point was really the Cleveland Indians situation, right, when you had Mike Clevenger and the other pitcher go out. And their teammates really called them out. And I remember talking to Kenley Jansen from the Dodgers at the time. And he said, you know, if we want to have a season, if we want to do any of this, like, we've got to keep ourselves accountable. And I think, you know, I've heard about the we made fun of the snitch line, okay, in Orlando. It wasn't
snitch
as necessary
back, right?
in Orlando, right. but it is very necessary going forward, right?
Right?
That snitch line is going to be really important. And it's got to be coming from within, because if the league has to crack down on teams, if the league has to make an example of somebody, kind of like they did with Lou Williams, I thought in the bubble they made an mm-hmm. example of him. We saw that in football with the Denver Broncos. They may try to make an example of those quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. But that's only going to be putting out spot fires. If you actually want this to work, it has to come from the players.
It's complicated.
Yeah. How important is it to you at the end of the day?
Right, but it's complicated, guys, right? Because on the teams that are marching toward a championship, I can see players holding each other accountable. We all know what it's like in the middle of the season with a team that maybe doesn't feel like it's really in there and not everybody's rowing in the same direction. And by the way, that Cleveland Indians example, Ramona, is exactly right. And that's the thing I think of the most also. But it is different in baseball, where you have a whole rotation of pitchers, and even some of the most important players can't not necessarily be replaced, but aren't as vital every day. James Harden, we just talked about in the last segment, was out in a club in a city he wasn't, according to the NBA, supposed to be in, being with people he wasn't supposed to be with, not wearing a face mask. And I don't know how things are going to feel like in the locker room when he does finally rejoin that team. But can the Rockets go out and do what they want to do this season without James Harden or whoever they trade him for to fulfill that role? No, they can't. So how much are other players in that locker room going to, quote, hold James Harden accountable? It is a very, very complicated stew. And it's just a lot of rules also. And Ramona, I haven't gotten a great answer on with a positive test. As Fiz says, we've read the protocols and the 10-day quarantine and the two negative tests to come back and all of that. But what have you heard about how the schedule is going to change? Because if someone comes with a positive test on a Monday, even if he is isolated immediately, what are they going to do about the team that he played on Saturday night or Sunday afternoon and the two teams that that team is supposed to play the following next day or the day after that once they try to get three or four games a week?
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be the big question going forward because, you know, in the NFL, you can isolate close contacts and you have all week to do it. You have the benefit of time. In the NBA, you don't have that. And they've tried to mitigate this a little bit by having more of a baseball schedule where you have sort of two games back to back. So theoretically, it would only be one team that you played. So you're not going to have every night a new team that you were worried about.
Yep.
But I just think back on that night when Rudy Gobert tested positive, March 11th, where somebody put this graphic up on Twitter of like how many teams the Jazz had played in the last 14 days and how many teams those teams had played in the last 14 days. And it was basically the whole league.
Right.
So, I mean, this is a house of cards. And, you know, if you think about the way that the nature of how this is structured. Now, I'll tell you this. I know one team that has been dealing with this and because of HIPAA laws, I can't say which player it is.
Sure.
But this team, you know, there was a player that tested positive that had like practiced with some teammates, and they've kind of been sweating it out this week to see if any more of them, this is away from the court, but they sweating it out to see if any more of them test positive. Turns out they're all okay. Everybody was fine, but what the NBA is hoping is that this little onboarding process is what's going to get all the positive tests, and you're not going to see, 9% again. Like, they're hoping they got their 9% out of the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
we still don't know, really. The medical community doesn't know enough concretely about the reinfection rate and whether and how long you have autoimmunity from that. So we don't know if, quote, getting out of the way means that a lot of those players just won't get it throughout this season or if someone can be reinfected. We will discover that as we go. All right, guys, coming up, let's get back to the basketball court because Doc Rivers responded to Paul George's critical comments saying, everyone needs to take some ownership for what happened against the Nuggets last season. We will react next on The Jump. The NBA preseason starts Friday. We're going to have the Kings and the Blazers from the Moda Center in Portland, 10:30 Eastern, 7:30 Pacific on ESPN and the app. I just hope they can play this one because, as we mentioned at the top of the show, Portland Trail Blazers, because of positive COVID tests, their facility is closed right now. Welcome back to The Jump. We are 4 days away from the start of the preseason. Sixers coach Doc Rivers, guys, still getting questions about his old team. The Clippers playoff collapse. still a matter of conversation. Last week on the All the Smoke podcast, Paul George was critical of his now former coach Doc Rivers and how he used Paul in the offense. So during a Sixers media availability this weekend, Doc responded, quote, "Hey, listen, I enjoyed coaching him. So not a lot to say there. Ty Lue was sitting right next to me, so he better hope it's not adjustments. It's not going to be much different. Listen, we lost the game, and I think everybody needs to take ownership. Obviously, we can always do better. Players can play better. So as far as I'm concerned, I'll leave it there." Coach to coach, my friend. Fizz, what is your takeaway from Doc's words?
Okay.
Oh, no, I thought Doc handled it perfectly. You don't want to go down that rabbit hole of back and forth banter about whose fault it was and blaming each other and all that stuff. And he's right. When you lose, it's everybody. Obviously, the coach he's got that volatile gig that is often, you know, the one that takes the scrutiny. But ultimately, everybody had a hand in going down, you know, losing a 3-1 lead. So let's just be real about that part of it. And I think that it's important. When you're a player and you're upset about how you're being used in the moment, it's a two-way street when it comes to conversation. You got to go to the coach's office and say, hey, how can we make this better? I remember Julius Randle walking into my office when we were really struggling trying to get him, you know, to really unleash. And he came to talk to me and we talked about how we can get him playing better basketball, how we could work together on that. It's not always the coach having to go to the player. So I just think it's not a good look for Paul George doing this publicly and putting blame just on Doc. I think that's better off said behind closed doors.
Yeah, look, Rach, when Paul made those comments last week, there was, I think a lot of people took the stuff he said about adjustments and coaching to be the main thing. But I actually think more of what was important here is how he talked about how he was used. He said, I was used like J.J. Redick or Ray Allen. It was all pin downs. And I know that was a constant source of frustration for Paul last year. Now, when the people who do statistical analysis broke that down, it actually wasn't right. It reminded me a little of Dwight Howard when he played for the Lakers and he said, like, I don't like to just run pick and roll, et cetera.
Right.
And it turned out, like, when you check the stats, it's like totally not how he was used at all. But every scout I talked to, when I would say, you know, what's going on with Paul? Like, what do you see there? The scouts who watched the Clippers play had the same opinion, which is Paul's not getting the spots and in the way that he was comfortable getting it in years past. Now, some of that's on Paul. Like, hey, you're on a different team, you're going to get the ball in a different way. Mm-hmm. But I actually think more of that is just on the idea that the Clippers did not have a true point guard on that team to organize the offense, and they still don't, frankly. And, you know, a lot of that fell on Kawhi Leonard. A lot of that fell on just the system they were running. But they're going to have to figure that out because Paul's not comfortable in the offense that they were running last year and in the ways he was being used. And whether the statistics bear that out or not, I trust the scouts who watch them play and say, you know, get your guy comfortable. And I think for Paul, like, if he had it to do over again, probably wouldn't have taken a shot at Doc because you don't want to take shots when the enduring image of you is hitting the side of the backboard.
Yep.
Yeah, and you know, I piggyback that, Ramona. You need a guard or a player on the floor that understands game flow and when a guy's not engaged in the game and what he needs. And they don't have that right now. That's what makes LeBron so great is because he knows the flow of the game. I don't know how many times he came to the bench and said, hey, we got to get D-Wade a layup. We got to get Chris Bosh an open shot. We got to get Ray Allen a shot. He understood that as a player, so it never fell all on Spo to figure out how to get a guy going. They collectively did it, and he was the catalyst of that. And I don't know if they have that working for their team right now. And for PG, man, I would say stay quiet, grind, do your job. You got some baggage from other teams. Right now, Doc's a guy that's a championship coach. I would stay totally away from that kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, I want to move on to another former Clipper, Montrezl Harrell. The sixth man of the year has switched locker rooms right down the hallway, Ramona. Another chapter to the ongoing L.A. Yeah. rivalry. Yesterday, he was asked about new teammate LeBron James. Take a listen to what he had to say.
I definitely think his leadership is a tremendous skill to have. Talking to guys, putting guys in the right places, knowing what coach wants us and where he wants us. So I think we have a strong, great leader in LeBron. Not only him, AD, Mark, a guy who's been around the league as well, man. So I think we just got great leadership in the locker room overall.
Great leadership in the locker room. Great leadership in the locker room. The Lakers and Clippers open their preseason against each other on Friday. They also open the season against each other. Ramona, do you read anything into those great leadership in the locker room comments?
Oh, yeah. That was the one thing the Clippers, like, I remember reporting on, you know, their collapse after last year. And I, you know, talked to a lot of people with the team, on the team, around the team. And there were two main criticisms, which was lack of leadership, on court leadership specifically, and the lack of a point guard who would sort of set up that offense, et cetera. Now, when Trez says that, I think that's a shot at the former team that he was coming from, right? That, you know, the Clippers, obviously, when you get six different answers about who the leader is, probably means you don't have a leader. Probably means you don't have that really strong leadership ability. And Rach, you and I have talked about this a lot with LeBron, and it's one of those intangibles that I don't think he gets enough credit for in terms of just leadership in that locker room, on that court. And when, you know, last year we were always talking about LA, you know, Clippers versus Lakers, and we looked at, you know, Kawhi and Paul and AD and LeBron, and I always said I'll take AD and LeBron just because I think they're the top two, you know, in terms of the two of the top five players in the league. But I don't think we realized the leadership gap that the Lakers had over the other contenders. And I think when Trez points that out, that's definitely a side eye at the Clippers.
Yeah, but I also think that it's a tough position to be in. You know, he played against LeBron. When you hear a guy talking the whole game, getting everybody in place a whole game, you can't help but to marvel at that as an opponent.
Yep.
And so now that he's with him and he's witnessing this team building that LeBron does on and off the court, it's something that he's never experienced. And it's kind of like when I compliment the Miami Heat culture, I'm not taking a shot at teams that I worked for after. It's hard, but people will take that as a shot at other teams' cultures. And so it's a tough position to be in when you're complimenting something that you've been a part of or you're coming to be a part of that's really unique and different. LeBron is arguably the best leader in professional sports to date. And you're going to that team and you're witnessing this, you can't help but to compliment it. And I don't think it necessarily has to be a shot back at the old team.
Well, LeBron himself is speaking to the media today, and he spoke about the addition of Trez. He also talked about his reaction to the super short offseason after the Lakers won a title. Listen to this.
Well, it's definitely too early to tell, but we're just so excited to have those guys here. You know, having Wes, you know, Dennis, obviously Trez and Big Mark. We're extremely excited to have those guys here. We're just working our habits.
What was your first reaction when you heard December 22nd for a season, and how did that change kind of your off-season plans from that point forward?
I was like, wow. Oh, and I said, oh, just being completely honest, I wasn't expecting that because early conversations were going on. I was hearing that there would be kind of a mid-January start, and the training camp will kind of start after Christmas. We have an opportunity to spend Christmas with our families. You know, so I had already planned a vacation with my family for us to go somewhere, which I haven't been able to do, obviously, since I've been in the league. And, you know, so I had to switch up a lot of things.
I can only say to LeBron that you'll have Christmas morning with your family because your game isn't until later in the day. Fizz, you coached LeBron for a while. How much pressure do you think is on him to essentially play every big game this season despite being in year 18 of his career because the league looks to him to help ratings, to help in this shortened season, to be a presence? It's not just playing for the Lakers when you're LeBron James, right?
Yeah, he's playing for the world. And come on, LeBron, you knew the owners was going to have you playing on Christmas, baby. There wasn't no way they was missing out on a Christmas Day game. So, and no, look, LeBron is sandbagging you, everybody. LeBron has not stopped working out. LeBron's body is in peak condition, and he is ready to go. And you look at the additions that they made to that team. Mark Gasol, Trez, two unique, totally different five men that bring absolute experience and talent to the team. Wes Matthews, oh my God, tough shooter. And then Dennis Schroeder is new age Rondo, speed, defense, all of the things that Rondo brought, except he's got a little bit better three-point shot and he's younger. And so LeBron is sandbagging. Don't let him fool you one bit. He may not be happy about the start, but he's going to be ready.
Ramona, what do you think?
You know, I actually felt the same way that LeBron felt when I started to hear the December 22nd date. I was like, no, we just got done. I need to like chill for a minute here. But I'm sure you did too. You got back from the bubble, which is an incredible undertaking. I mean, look, this year has been like this for everybody. And I think that nobody would blame LeBron or AD or any of the two or anyone from the Heat or the Lakers if they kind of got on the on-ramp a little bit slowly this year, right? If they just took a little ease into it.
Don't
you know, LeBron averaged about...
Don't buy it, Ramona.
I know. I don't buy it either, though.
LeBron is
just
coming
out the
gates.
Just knowing LeBron the way that we've come, right? He wants to play, right? Like, yeah. he wants to play as many minutes as possible. So I think the way that he reacts to this sets the tone because, Rachel, this is a theme I think we're going to be talking about for the next couple years. He's got four, all right? Six is coming up, and it's in his sights.
Five, too, Ramona. Five is an important number for number of rings for a player with the Lakers. Just saying.
That's right. That's right. And so, you know, it may not be ideal, but when you're sitting on four, and Kobe and Magic and all those guys that got five are right there, and then six with Michael Jordan is right there, you got a couple of years, and you got a new squad with some younger teammates who, and this is something we learned from covering the Warriors over the years, when you have new, fresh blood in there, that helps everybody because they didn't just come off playing until October, okay? Schroeder was done early. Montrez was done earlier. Wes Matthews was done early. Like, those guys are hungry. And I think that'll help the Lakers going when they restart here because you just got fresh blood in there.
It is interesting, though, because you are balancing a lot of agendas. LeBron played such tough defense from the start of last season, and that made a huge difference on how it rippled throughout the team. If he's not doing that at the start of the season, that tone is set differently. And we saw that the Lakers needed it in the NBA Finals. So we will see what happens this time. Coming up, remember that team that beat the Clippers in the playoffs? Yeah, we talked about it earlier in the show. Now we're going to get to it. Our predictions for Jamal Murray and the Nuggets. Woohoo! And also here is our jump recommends for today. Finally, I spoke with celebrity tattoo artist Mr. Cartoon, who designs the new Clippers uniforms. He joined us to talk about working with them. He's a native Angeleno. This is a big deal for him. And oh, by the way, he has also tattooed Snoop, Beyonce, and the late, great Kobe Bryant. Check out a short clip from our convo right now, and you can head over to YouTube as well for the extended version.
It's amazing to see these designs on the Clipper uniforms because this was writing that was used on the back of the homies' sweatshirts, and we would write it on the walls. And, you know, this is something from L.A. that comes from, like, graffiti art to low-riding culture. And for it to be on a major sports team is big for us.
I mean, you had police chasing you off writing it on graffiti walls, and now they're putting it on an NBA uniform. That's a huge leap.
Huge leap, you know, and this opens the doors for a lot of up-and-coming young people that love graffiti, but, hey, they can have a career in art or in sign painting or lettering or, hey, they could design for the Clippers.
You did, of course, also work with the late, great Kobe Bryant. What was that experience like for you, and how do you think of it now after his passing?
Kobe is a true inspiration. You know, we actually had an appointment to get his daughter's name on him when he passed, and I think the whole world was crushed. I don't know if it will ever be the same, but he was always a gentleman, funny. You know, he would ask you how your kids are doing, remember your friends' names. You know, it's amazing, man. A huge loss for Los Angeles and the world.
And welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols. Starting today, we're going to be previewing some of the notable teams heading into the new season. The first team on our list made it all the way to the Western Conference Finals before losing to the eventual champs. So before we spin forward, let's take one last look back with previously on the Denver Nuggets.
The Clippers, we know, is going to be a rugged test. Between now and Thursday, what do you do?
We play Thursday?
Yeah.
You don't get 2 days off?
No.
On some nights, he's merely an absolute star, and on other nights, he's an actual supernova.
There are very few guys in the league who go nuclear like Jamal Murray.
He has it working on all cylinders. He is working Utah like a part-time job right now.
Are you going to say something?
Go ahead, bro.
I just don't get not double-teaming this guy. Like, get the ball out of his hands. You cannot stop him.
2 seconds to go for the win, and it rims out. Denver hangs on!
I've never been so happy to play so bad in my life.
Nikola Jokic, man, continues to be the smoothest center in the game.
Quietly with the, 30-14, he was like Old Faithful, just very rock steady.
Shot clock winding down. Murray puts up a three. Bang! Jamal Murray from downtown. This is absolutely shocking.
What a performance by this Nuggets team.
You got Shaq, you got Charles, you got Stephen A., all y'all. Better start giving this team some damn respect.
I'm not counting the Nuggets out next year. Do it at your own peril.
I love that. Work in Utah like a part-time job. Fizz and Ramona still in the house. And guys, let's keep with the TV theme we had previously on. Well, let's now discuss the cliffhanger in last year's season finale. Jamal Murray, one of the big breakout stars in the bubble, averaging 24.4 points, scored more than 40 points in four games. Jamal has no All-Star, no All-NBA appearances, but that sure looks like it's about to change. Coach, what are your expectations for Jamal this upcoming season in what is still a very packed Western Conference?
Well, I expect him to make the All-Star game. That's the next step for a guy that had that kind of playoff, who's taken that kind of jump, knowing how that makes you feel. He's probably been in the gym, in the weight room, working on every little bit of his game because he understands there's a gauntlet out west at point guard to get into that All-Star game and to get past a team like the Lakers to get into the finals. You're talking about Steph coming back, John Wall just came west, Dame Lillard, Chris Paul. You got the young kid in Memphis who's spectacular, Ja. I mean, I could keep going on and on and on. So every night he's going to have to play like he played in the playoffs to take that All-Star spot. And that same kind of effort will lead his team to a higher plateau. I think the kid is fantastic. I think the word nuclear is a great word to describe him when he starts to get going.
Well, I think, you know, for young players, when you have a performance like he did in the bubble, the whole rest of the league is now watching all that tape and trying to adjust to him because he's just become a force that you have to reckon with if you're going to play the Nuggets. Now, I think the biggest issue for him is, can he do this consistently when they're not in the bubble and he's not locked in the playoffs? And also on the defensive end, because the Nuggets obviously lost some great defensive players, and he's got to step up on that side and be a leader on that side of the ball, because that is, you know, Mike Malone was joking today, like, you know, we lost some defenders. I guess we're going to score 130 every night. but generally speaking, defense wins championships in this league. So I think that's where he's got to improve.
All right, I want to take a look at the games the Nuggets fans will need to binge watch in the first half of the schedule. Christmas Day, the Nuggets host the Clippers, who they, of course, bounced out of the playoffs. Clips looking for a little revenge there. They will also face the new-look Suns on ESPN on January 22nd. And finally, it's spoiler alert time. Caesars gives the Nuggets 10-1 odds of winning the Western Conference behind the Lakers and the Clippers. So, Coach Fizz, where do you predict Denver will finish in the West standings? Are you at 3 also?
It all depends on what the Clippers decide to do. You know, is someone going to take ownership of that team in that locker room? I know what T. Lou is going to bring. Kenny Atkinson, Dan Craig, Chauncey Billups, Larry Drew. That staff is loaded. They ready to coach. But is someone in that locker room going to take ownership of that team and really lead that group to the place they need to be? And a lot of that is going to be based on, is Paul George and Kawhi Leonard playing or the appropriate amount of minutes together? Because remember, it was minutes management last year. And the big thing was they never got together and got to clicking. And so that's going to be critically important for them to get the number two seed. Because if they don't get clicking, that Denver team is ready to take off. And Jokic ain't no joke. So that's where I'm at with it.
Jokic ain't no joke. We will leave it at that, Fizz. Thanks so much. We will be watching you, Nuggets. And in this next segment, for you guys watching The Jumper, to give you a little update on what's going on with the Greek Freak and that contract situation in Milwaukee, stay tuned. It's crunch time here on The Jump. The Bucks gave Giannis a unique gift for his 26th birthday. After practice, the entire team sang happy birthday to him and then filled his locker with pens. Of course, Giannis is deciding whether or not to sign a Supermax extension with the Bucks. So I guess the team thought he could use some pens this year to help him sign. Ramona, do you think the birthday gift will help Giannis decide whether or not to stay in Milwaukee?
Look, I don't think they need to pressure him. I mean, do you feel like peer pressure is going to be a good thing here? I think you just sit back and act like nothing's happening. Just sit back, let him do his thing, let him come around to it when he's ready.
I don't know. I think you got to keep letting them know how much you want them and how much you love them. You don't want to take it for granted that he knows, and then at the end of this thing, he's leaving you and he's saying, well, they never showed me that they love me. So throw all the pins in his locker, do everything, balloons in his car.
Fizz, they're offering him almost $300 million. How much more love do you want them to show him? They have shown him.
Whatever it takes to keep him in Milwaukee.
I get that. I get that.
Do whatever it takes.
Let's move on to Zion Williamson. He said Sunday that he will head into the season with no minutes restrictions. Coach, what kind of production do you expect from Zion if he has no minute restrictions?
Oh my goodness, you saw what he was doing in just small minutes, you know? I mean, this guy, he's so versatile and powerful, and how Stan is gonna use him out there and the way Stan is gonna play, if he gets to play his full allotment of minutes, the league better watch out.
Look, this quote caught my eye for a number of reasons. If Zion has no minutes restrictions, that means Zion won. Okay. This was a source of tension and frustration among both sides all last year because, you know, the Pelicans have kind of been treating him with kid gloves, and they want to protect him, and they don't want him to be out there in ways too long, and that puts pressure on him. But he wants to play as much as possible.
You know, Alvin Gentry is out there, though.
If they're saying no restrictions, he won.
Yeah, and Ramona, you know Alvin Gentry is out there, though, reading that quote, being like, where was this last season? Where was this in the bubble? But there you go. Thank you, Ramona.
Totally.
Thank you, Coach Fizz. Thanks to Mr. Cartoon for joining me today. We will be back tomorrow on ESPN. Thanks for watching.